You're listening to the Podcast Detroit Network. Visit www.podcastdetroit.com for more information.
You've now tuned in to the Drawing Board Podcast, a powerful, thought-provoking discussion where we talk about family, relationships, ministry, community, and career. Let's see what exciting guests we have on our show today. Hello again. This is Andre Ebron, the host of the Drawing Board Podcast. I am here with Antoine D. Jackson. And here at the Drawing Board Podcast, we talk about our faith. We talk about our family. We talk about our community, and we talk about our career. And let's not forget, I know Brother Antoine Jackson is eligible, so we're going to have to talk about relationships.
We might have an update.
Oh, he's not available, but we'll talk about that during the show. Oh, that's right. You made it through Thanksgiving. I forgot.
I did.
Yeah, yes, I saw that post.
There it is.
I saw
there
that post. But I want to start with flipping the switch. Before we go into introducing him, I want to lift up some of this product. You have to get this book. Go to Amazon. Go to Barnes & Nobles. You have to get this book. You can download it online, and you can follow us as we talk about this book tonight. So, Brother Jackson, welcome to the show.
Man, thank you so much for having me. I appreciate this opportunity to share with the audience and just to be here with my friend and brother. I got to give a shout out to Brother Ebron, because earlier this year, this past summer, actually, he was one of our featured speakers at the Flip the Switch conference. Yeah. And he was noted. He was noteworthy. The participants talked about how much they really enjoyed your sessions and how much they enjoyed your input. So I really appreciate your brother for coming through for us.
Oh, man. Listen, I was glad to be in the house. You had some power. The roster was power packed. I stepped up to the plate and I said, listen, I got to swing and hit it hard, because there are so many people here who were having such a great impact. Mm-hmm. And you adding that youth track was very powerful. I was talking to, and you know, because whether it's in the community or whether it's in business or whether it's in ministry, I was talking to some of my good friends, and a lot of our leaders, they were already leading these things when they were our age.
That's right.
And now it's not that we're up next. We're up now.
That's right. That's right.
We are up now. And so equipping and preparing our youth to be successful, not in the future, but successful right now.
Right now.
And the information is moving as the speed of light, and all of these things are happening. Not to mention, a lot of the things that our youth are confronting on a daily basis, mm-hmm, are a lot greater than what we were confronted with.
Right. Very much so. I mean, when you think about now that you have third and fourth graders who are being exposed to things that we didn't even know about until we were 16 and 17 years old.
Absolutely.
And your mind can go and think about some of the topics that I'm considering. But we have to make sure that we're starting earlier with our young people, that we're beginning early to invest the knowledge and the wisdom into their lives, so that when they get to be 10, 12, 13, and they're faced with these situations that we didn't see until we were 20.
Absolutely.
That they know at least how to respond, how they're supposed to respond to those situations. So I'm a firm believer in, you know, when that baby comes out of the womb, you start to educate that child then.
From day one.
From day one.
I was talking to my daughter, Brother Jackson, and I was telling her, when I was in law school, my wife was pregnant. Mm. And so I believe we had to read to her. We had all the, you know, of course you get all the books, and we're playing Beethoven, and we're playing all these, you know, classical music and gospel music and all that. But I had to read to her. And since I had all of those cases to read and to brief and all of that, I was reading my law books to
her. That's
right. And she was learning in utero. So we were teaching, and like the teaching and training, it never stops.
Never.
And from day one, I know especially, and we'll get into this, but like how you have to, you're always in a position of teaching and learning in relationships.
Right.
I was talking to my students today, and I was saying, one thing you have to understand about every relationship is you have to know where the boundaries are.
That's right.
And
when
you don't know where the boundaries are, there always will be misunderstanding.
Absolutely.
There will always be confusion, and somebody in some way is going to get hurt, because you've expanded your reach beyond the boundaries.
That's right. That's right. And what we take for granted too often in relationships is we say, I'm going to just think about what the boundaries are. I'm going to assume within myself what those boundaries are. And so you never take a moment to really communicate with that other person. You know, communication is a two-way street. We have a conversation when you talk and then I talk.
Right.
And you talk and I talk. But then there's also the listening component that is happening inside of there. And what we do is we go into relationships, especially, and we start to make assumptions. We quote unquote use the context clues of situations.
That's right.
And we never ask a definitive question. Brother Ebron, is it okay if I shake your hand or is it not okay? We have to learn how to get to a place with relationships where communication truly becomes communication, where I'm okay with asking a question and not making an assumption, because then I'll know where those boundaries are. There's no assumption in it. And I was sharing this with one of the young people at our church the other day. Shout out to Greater Mitchell Temple Church of God in Christ.
Oh, yeah.
Bishop John H. Sheard is my pastor.
Absolutely.
Was sharing with him.
Wait a minute. You didn't give him the address.
I'm sorry. Greater Mitchell Temple Church of God in Christ, located at 13737 Curtis, also Bishop John H. Sheard Avenue in the city of Detroit. 48235. Come visit us Sunday morning at 11:30 a.m. for morning worship. We also have Sunday evening worship beginning at 6:30 p.m. Tonight is our Bible study night, so you can get there tonight and join us for Bible study as well.
Amen.
But I was sharing with the young man how important it is to have this communication with people who we call friends, who we're in relationship with, because sometimes people will do things and we'll get hurt in the process. But we never told them that that was a boundary we never wanted them to cross.
Absolutely.
We never clearly stated, this is the boundary. This is the area that I don't need you to touch, or I don't need you to go in, or I need you to come in. And so what happens is people do things based off the information that they have or don't have. And so in relationship, it's so important. And I think it's imperative that we begin to teach our young people this too, that we communicate, that we learn how to actually have a conversation where there is listening and there's speaking that's happening, so that we can keep moving forward in a good and positive way in our relationships.
I fully agree. So we've jumped right in talking about relationships. So the interesting thing about that is a lot of time our framework or our reference for a healthy relationship, we haven't even been taught how to properly not just talk, because a lot of people are talking.
Right.
But very few people are communicating.
Right.
There are people out there. And if you tuned in, all of us have been guilty of this. You've gone on your talking because you feel like you need to be heard, and then you haven't even figured out what message you effectively want to share. And so the person is sitting there trying to follow you, like, okay, I'm listening to you. Okay, what exactly are you saying?
Mm-hmm.
And so you must be clear about what kind of message you want to convey. You have to be intentional about the words that you use, because, you know, I've been married now going on 15 years.
All right.
And sometimes – still in the communication,
sure.
When I say love and my wife says love, we both mean love,
mm-hmm.
but the context and what we mean and how we want to receive love is very different.
Right.
And I had to, there was an evangelist at my church. I was a young married man. And, you know, you go shopping for your wife. You want to do things. You're buying gifts.
Mm-hmm.
And she said something to me that was so profound. Husbands, I'm getting ready to give you the game. If you're not married yet,
nuggets, Reverend,
get ready. you want to buy her a gift that she wants, not just a gift that you want her to have.
That's right.
And you want to love her in the way she needs to be loved, not in the way that you just desire to love her.
Mm-hmm.
Because when you're able to communicate love in the way that she and I think it's, I want to say it's Gary Chapman with the five love languages.
That's right.
And you want to communicate love in the way that she needs it, not just in the way you want to give it.
That's right.
All right.
You know, a good gift is not the gift that you picked.
Okay.
It's actually the gift they told you they wanted.
Oh, wow. What do you think about those who say, well, that takes all the spontaneity out of it? That takes all the fun out of it. What do you think about that?
I believe in spontaneity, especially in relationships. And I do believe that there is always that element of spontaneity. But where the spontaneity comes in is that I remember, I heard what you said you liked. I heard what you said you wanted. I saw your response when you saw this item or this piece or this moment. I took note of that. And so where the spontaneity comes comes in is I remembered what I saw, what I heard, what I felt, mm-hmm. and I come around later on and I present you with this item, this gift, that moment, that feeling. That's where the spontaneity comes in. Not when you come to me and say, hey, you know, I want this bottle of water. Okay, yeah, I can give it to you.
Right.
There's really no spontaneity in it, but you asked for it. But when I saw you walking through the mall and you saw that Coach purse and she said, yeah, that's nice. That would be nice to wear with such and such. Now she done made plans for it and all that. No, in that moment, I'm not going to move.
Yeah.
About 2-3 weeks later, she'll show up at the house and there's a nice Coach bag on the on the couch or on the bed. And she'll be like, what's that? Look inside.
Okay.
And what she's going to say.
You're giving away some secrets.
I'm giving some away. Yeah. Because here's what she's going to do. She's going to say, you heard me.
Right.
In a moment when I was talking and dreaming.
Mm-hmm.
And you took note of it.
Wait a minute.
And you took some action and flipped the switch and did it.
So. You flipped the switch and did it. What? Listen, so Brother Jackson said you got to wait till they are most thirsty. No, I'm joking. But
I didn't say that.
No, he didn't say that.
Take it how you will.
Yeah, but in those relationship goals or terms, making sure that you keep the spontaneity.
Absolutely.
By giving the gift that was asked for, but presenting it. It matters how you present
Absolutely.
It.
Absolutely. Timing is everything.
Timing is everything.
Timing is everything.
Agreed. So I think this is the time where I can let these beautiful people know a little bit more about you.
Sure, sure.
All right. So listen, Elder Antoine D. Jackson is a native Detroiter. Shout out for Detroit.
Shout out.
Who has been sharing the light with the world over a decade as a gospel preacher, best-selling author, conference host, entrepreneur, nonprofit professional, and media spokesman. He is a celebrated thought leader on youth mentoring, entrepreneurship, and the important role of family caregivers. Oh, man, let's talk about that for a second.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
So I have been a caregiver. I will say this, and this you'll see this in my book. It's going to come out December 2019.
Okay.
It's called The Journey Matters.
Okay.
So
okay.
We're going from the drawing board to The Journey Matters.
Yes,
but
sir.
I have been a caregiver in some way for a member of my family over the last 14 years.
Wow. Wow.
So my wife, had gotten sick, and I was her caregiver.
Mm-hmm.
And then my mother had gotten sick, and I was her caregiver.
Mm.
And it was back and forth. And there's really not a ministry for the caregiver.
Right, right.
And, man, the weight that you carry as a caregiver,
yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Man, that is, my brother, that is a weight sometimes that goes unnoticed by most.
Absolutely.
There will be family members who feel like this is a mandate and it's mandatory that you do so.
Yeah.
So it goes sometimes without a lot of thanks.
Mm-hmm.
And particularly in our community that, you know, it's no way in the world that Big Mama is going to right. the nursing home.
Right.
Because, you know, hey, at our house, we keep everybody in-house, right?
Sure, sure.
And that has its place. I'm not disparaging that.
Mm-hmm.
But what I am saying is sometimes there's a better way.
There is a better way. Absolutely.
So talk to me about
there
that.
There is
Brother
a better
Jackson.
Way. So, you know, I'm very transparent about my journey. And I've been fortunate enough to be blessed to serve as my mother's legal guardian since I was 17 years old.
Yes, sir.
My mom has schizophrenia. She is not a schizophrenic. She has schizophrenia.
Understood.
And which is a mental disorder that causes paranoia, hallucinations, etc. And so for a number of years, she lived with me in my home and I took care of her and made sure she was okay. And to your point about sometimes there's a better way, it became so taxing and so weighing on me. I mean, every area of my life, it began to show up.
Yes, sir.
Not because I wanted it to, but it was there and it began to show up. And so I was lethargic. I was tired at work. I was tired during doing the things that I really liked to do. I wasn't enjoying life. And so the guilt of saying I can't put my mom in a facility and I can't put her there. And then you begin to listen to some of the voices that are surrounding you. You know, everybody want to tell you how to run that ball up the court. From the sideline.
Absolutely.
But they're never on the court with
never
you.
Never on the court.
They never have the ball in their hand. They never wearing the uniform, but they have all of this, all of these recommendations and all this advice. And so
And they never show up to help.
And some of them never show up to help
yes, sir.
Too, but they want to call the shots. And
yeah.
So I remember talking to a social worker at that time, Ms. Williams. I every time I see her, I try to do something to bless her. Because she said to me, she said, Antoine, if placing your mother in a facility, whatever it may be, she said, of course, you're going to make sure it's quality, et cetera. She said, but if placing her in that facility extends her life and yours, where are you losing?
Where are you losing?
And I had to sit with that for a minute and really begin to unpack that, because what I found, Brother Ebron, is that it really was pride that had me thinking I had to be the be all end all with this situation. I feel God tonight.
Yes, sir.
But what I had to learn very quickly was, when I'm going to truly make a change in my life and in anybody else's life, it means that I have to be willing to give up control.
Okay.
I have to be willing to take my hands off of it. And so with this caregiving thing, what I learned very quickly was my mother would do so much better in a different type of setting. Because there's only so much I can do. I'm going to work every day. I'm spending at least 8 to 9 hours away from her. She's in the house. I'm very transparent. So I'll share with you. On one occasion, she actually walked away from the house and she was gone for about 2.5 days. Didn't know where she was at.
Yes, sir. But God.
But God.
Yes, sir.
And I thank God that he preserved and protected her through that. But it was the wake up moment. It was the say, okay, Antoine, you can't do this. And so began to make some moves, began to talk to that social worker. And we were able to find a placement for my mother. And she's doing wonderful. She prefers her home. She prefers to be where she is. It's not she's not locked up in a room anywhere. She's free to go and come and do things. She's taken out to social events and all that. But I was depriving her of that opportunity because I was so prideful, thinking like, no, I got
to
carry all of this.
Yes, sir.
No, there's a better way sometimes. But what we do is when we start getting in our emotions, when we start getting into our personal feelings, when we let those voices around us begin to dictate the steps that we take and the thoughts that we think, that's when we set ourselves up for failure. And so I had to learn in that moment, okay, this situation, yes, I've been doing it all these years,
mm-hmm.
but at what cost?
At what cost?
At what cost have I been doing it this long? And then I had to say, okay, here it is. Let's go ahead and take this leap of faith, trusting God mm-hmm. that he's not going to steer me somewhere that would harm my mother or me.
Yes, sir.
You know, because when we start talking about, I trust God, I believe God. You know, my bishop says, if you trust God, it's going to be like that chair. You're going to sit in it.
Absolutely.
If you I trust this chair to hold me.
Mm-hmm.
And here's the wonderful part about God. He ain't never let me go.
He never failed you. He never failed.
Never. So his record is intact. So therefore,
yes,
I had to learn how to trust God in it. So it was like all this internal back and forth that I was really going through. And I actually wrote about it. That was my very first book. It was called When You've Had Enough.
When You've Had Enough, capital E.
You've Had Enough.
Yes, sir.
Because it really boils down to I had to reach the place where I had gotten to the end of me, where I determined that I really had enough of this back and forth, this struggle. And that's when I began to see the shift happen. And so, as I said, I was able to move my mother into a facility. And here it is. I was not just the caretaker to my mother.
Okay.
But I'm also a caretaker to my brother. I have an older brother who suffered a closed head injury after falling from a third story window at the age of 5. And he's 11 years older than I am.
Okay.
And so I've been legal guardian of both he and my mother since I was 17.
Since you were 17.
Since I was 17. And so here I am. I'm trying to carry the weight of two people.
Yes, sir.
And let's be very real as caretakers. What we do is we extend so much of ourselves to make sure that this person has a long life.
Yes.
That we wind up shortening our own.
That we do.
Statistics show that the caretaker winds up dying years before the person they're caring for does.
Yes, sir.
Why? Because we never take a moment to say, is there a better way to do this?
Is there a better way?
Is there a better way? And so I thank God that he was able to place people in my path like Mrs. Williams, who was able to say, hey, there's a better way to do this. And I'm going to be honest, I didn't hear it the first time.
Right.
But it began to resonate. It began to really, as I sat with it and began to unpack it, it was like, okay, there is a better way to do this. And so now you're talking about 8 years now where my mother and brother have been on a very steady journey of just, I mean, wholeness. I mean, and how I know this, you know, my mother would typically have to be hospitalized at least twice a year.
Okay.
She has been to the hospital in probably close to 6 or 7 years.
Praise the Lord.
But it was me having to make that change, make that shift. And so she's in a good place. My brother's in a good placement. And my brother was with me for Thanksgiving. My mother makes up her mind when she wants to come. But I'm still legal guardian, still all those things. But I've been able to find a better way to do it. And so when I try to advocate and talk to those who are caregivers, I say to them, don't kill yourself. trying to save
them. Trying to save somebody else.
You're not Jesus.
Yes, sir. Absolutely.
You ain't got to do that.
Let me tell you, man, I was for years, because my mother is overcoming MS. Mm. And for years, I used to go every night to help her get into the bed. Mm. And sometimes, just transparently, she would sometimes end up falling out of the bed. Or, and I would have to go back over there and to help get her back in the bed. And of course, you know, you don't just go. And, no. So you stay and then still going to work and doing. I did that for years until we made some different decisions and some different decisions were made. And I think I slept maybe I slept so hard for about a week, 2 weeks. Yes, and I didn't realize how much was on me until I no longer had to do it. And I said, wow, I was really, you know, I was stressing myself out. Mm-hmm, and then you don't really sleep well.
Absolutely.
Because, you know, with that on your mind and you're just from task to task, from thing to thing, you're moving and you could be at, I could be at work and get a phone call and have to make that move or I have to do different things. And the reality is that wasn't God's best for me.
That's right.
And it wasn't God's best for my mother. Mm-hmm. Of course, all family members and everybody else has, you know, that thing. But at the end of the day, you got to look at what is best for both people. So I feel that that anointing flowing at this moment. Mm-hmm. I want you to speak out to some caregivers right now who may be at that juncture or that crossroad and it's time to flip that switch or it's time to make some decisions or somebody might be going into being a caregiver and they need to be equipped and girded up with what they need to go. Just speak to them, Brother Jackson.
Absolutely. Personally, I encourage you, if you're headed into this caregiving role, first and foremost, I want you to be patient with yourself. As much patience as you're showing with the person you're caring for, be patient with yourself, knowing that you are yet still a human, that you are yet still a person who has mental, emotional, spiritual needs yourself. And so don't get all hard and beat up on yourself because you quote unquote, didn't make the right decisions or didn't do it right. And then really begin to seek out a support system.
Yes.
One of the things that the social worker, she was always around. She was always there. I mean, literally, I could call her in the middle of the night or anything if something was going on. And so it's important that you utilize those resources that are around you. Understand that there are people who have been trained, educated, prepared to help you through that process of being a caregiver. Utilize those resources. Do not find yourself imprisoned in a room with open doors.
That sounds great. Say that again.
Do not find yourself imprisoned in a room with open doors.
Okay.
You're standing in the middle of a room and every door, every window, there are many exits for you to get out of it. But yet, because in your mind you say it won't work or I can't do this, you wind up feeling imprisoned, although you have access to freedom. And so that's what I had to learn how to do in that situation. So as a caregiver, if you're walking into that, make sure that you are utilizing those resources. There are many opportunities for respite care. Some of you who have been caregivers for a number of years, you don't give yourself a break. If you were like me, you didn't go on vacations. If you did go anywhere, it was only for a few hours and then you had to make sure you were back. As Brother Ebron talked about, you know, there was one point where my mom and brother actually lived together in a apartment. And I thought they were well and thought they were good, but I never slept well.
Yes,
and it wasn't until I got out of that situation that I actually had a good night's sleep. I saw the difference in
yes,
it.
Sir.
And so it's important that you give yourself a break. So look for those respite opportunities where you can engage and take them to. And then I'd say to you, remember you. I know we teach that. You know, selfishness is wrong and you shouldn't be focused on you. Well, the scripture says,
all right,
that we are to love the Lord our God and love our neighbor. Watch this, as ourselves.
Yes, sir.
So I cannot properly love anybody if I don't love me.
Absolutely.
I cannot properly care for anybody until I've properly cared for myself. So this is not an invitation for you to throw yourself away.
Okay.
Because you will only be as good for your loved one as you are for yourself.
That was good. So I know all of those nuggets that are out there that you just heard Elder Jackson drop right there. That needs to be replayed and replayed and replayed. And what I think I extracted from that is don't stay locked in a room with open doors. Okay. That was powerful. So let's talk about this, though, because when you said that, it also, for me, unlocked the idea of mentorship. Mm-hmm. Because a lot of times, especially when we're working with youth, there are myriad of open doors. There are vast open doors. Mm-hmm. I can hear the scripture say, I set before you an open door. Yeah. Many, you know, yeah. Or God has opened a door that no man can shut. He shut a door that no man can open. But there are so many opportunities that exist for youth right now. Mm-hmm. And a lot of times the children are confined to the parents' exposure, and some people may be afraid for their child to outrun them.
Right.
Or they come home with homework. I've been guilty of this. Come home with homework. I have no idea what this is. Mm-hmm. But guess who does know? Google knows.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
But we have to I want your thoughts on this. Like, I see in my mind, I see in pictures. I think in, well, we all think in pictures. Sure. But when you said that, I saw like this book cover. I would love for you to write a blog about this. So here's my challenge to you. Locked in a room with open door. So mm-hmm. I see a person like standing in the middle of a room, mm-hmm. Especially as it relates to flipping the switch, where there seems to be like darkness around, but in each door, there's a light coming from each door and a spotlight shining down on that person. Mm-hmm. Do you get the imagery?
Yeah, I
do. Of
that? I see it.
And then saying like, literally, the opportunities are so vast that it's just up for you to choose. Mm-hmm. In your book, Flip the Switch, you say the choice is yours.
Absolutely.
So let's talk about how that relates to mentorship.
Yeah. So absolutely, the choice is yours. And when we start talking about mentoring, let me speak to the parents first.
Okay.
So it's imperative as a parent that as great as I want to be of a father to my daughter, I realize that there are certain assets I don't have.
Okay.
And so I have to be humble enough.
I was about to say, that's a humbling place.
I have to be humble enough to put her in places where she can get what she needs.
That's good. And it's an acknowledgement that particularly at that time, that in my own toolbox, I may not have
capacity.
It
really boils down to a thing of capacity. I have to understand my capacity. I am a father, and I love my daughter dearly. God knows. Shout out to Madison, MJ, yes. Baby girl. I love her. But here's the thing about it. I'm her father, and there are coming places and stages in her life that only her mother will be able to speak to her in.
Explain.
So we have daughters that are developing.
Oh yeah, yes.
And so their anatomy begins to change, and when my daughter's anatomy began to change, she needed to purchase certain type of.
Let me tell you, I almost cried, brother.
Okay,
so I almost cried, brother.
You weren't
Jackson.
The only one. You're
listen, I was standing there. They were trying to talk to me. I said, I don't want to hear none of this. I don't want to hear it.
A baby.
Yeah,
no.
She's standing up.
Yeah.
My daughter's growing up.
But here was the thing. I had to understand that I had limited capacity in that area.
Yes, sir.
And so therefore, I defaulted or gave over, if you will, to her mother. So, hey, you know, this is what Madison's going through. Can you help her through it? But explain it to me.
Explain it to me.
So that while she's over here with me, we have shared custody. So when she's with me, I need to understand how this needs to operate, what she needs here too. And so it that takes an admission of your limited capacity. It takes an acknowledgement that I don't have the capacity to do everything. And I share this with people about mentoring. Sometimes there is this, or not sometimes, but there is a misconception about what mentoring is. We think that to be a mentor, I got to have 5 degrees. I got to be making 6 figure or 7 figures. And I got to be. No. Believe it or not, you're mentoring children or individuals informally every single day.
Okay.
Just by being who you are, to the negative or to the positive. You're mentoring somebody. What it simply means, what mentoring simply is that I am providing somebody an outlet to see something different.
Oh, wait a minute. Rewind, press play again.
Mentoring is simply providing somebody an outlet to see something different.
To see something different.
I am the son of a mother who has schizophrenia.
Yes.
I am the son of a father who I've never met to this very moment. Don't know who he is, have no clue. I was raised by my grandmother, a sainted woman from the great state of Mississippi.
Okay. M-I-S-S.
Right.
I-S-S-I-P-P. Crooked letter.
Yeah. I lived
in a situation where, for all intents and purposes, I had no examples of anything I am today. God, I thank you.
Yes.
There was nobody around me that I could look at and say, I'm a parallel after them. But here's what my grandmother said. Mm-hmm. She said, I want you to get on the Michigan bus, because we lived at 33rd and Michigan Avenue. She said, I want you to get on the Michigan bus and ride it down to Cadillac Square. She said, I want you to sit there and watch the people. She said, and see who you might want to be.
Now, wait a minute. Now, that took wisdom. Now, that is great wisdom.
Because she understood her limited capacity in that area.
Mm-hmm.
And then she got me in church. And she said, you watch Brother Shuttlewood. That was the deacon. Or he's a deacon now, but he was the brother who drove the church van.
Yes, sir. I saw about that. Those stops right there.
Yeah. She said, you watch him. You watch Bishop Allen. You watch these people so that you can pull from them an opportunity to see something that you otherwise wouldn't see. And so when we think about mentoring, those of us who have steered clear of mentoring, those who say, I can't do mentoring, really think about it. What part of your life could you show a child that they otherwise would not have seen? I listened to a brother tell a story a few weeks ago. He said he took a young man who's lived in this city of Detroit all of his life. He's a teenager. He took him into an office building and they rolled the elevator to the second floor. And the young man was just amazed. He had never been on an elevator, had never been to the second floor of an office building or in an office building. He needed an opportunity to see something different.
Exposure
provides an education that me talking to you never will.
Exposure provides an education that me talking to you never will.
Never will.
Somebody put that in the comments.
It never will. So when I became exposed, watch this. When I became exposed to those individuals, those men wearing suits in downtown Detroit.
Yes, sir.
It became something that I wanted to see. And so at 14 years old, my first job was at then National City Bank, which is now PNC Bank.
Okay. Oh, wow.
You understand?
Absolutely.
Working on a project called Project Reach, where it was aimed at reaching minorities to get them to come to National City Bank to do their banking. Right down there in the First National Building.
Yes, sir.
In downtown Detroit. But it wasn't until my grandmother said, you got to come out of this place that you know so well and go look for something else. And so now I got to switch and talk to those who are being mentored. You have to understand that a mentor is always going to make you feel uncomfortable about where you are.
Now, listen, say that again.
A mentor is always going to make you feel uncomfortable about where you are, where you're going.
So that sounds like getting comfortable with being
uncomfortable. Absolutely. You have to, because in this life, life changes. Things change. I had a full head of hair, but now it's thinning.
Man, listen, my hairline used to be, I got to take selfies like this now. I got to tilt forward so you can see that I actually have one.
Do you hear me? I had the waves. I mean, you get seasick looking at my hair.
Oh, man.
But now you can barely find a few. Why? Because things change.
Yes, sir.
And so I had to learn that things will change over time. And so I had to look for the things that were consistent. My faith had to become consistent.
Absolutely.
My belief in God had to become consistent. Those are what I call my non-negotiables.
Okay.
This just has to be in place. Everything else can go crazy. Everything else can fall apart. But this
has to stay constant.
This has to stay constant, because this is where I find my help. This is where I find my strength. This is where I find my joy. And all of that, my help, my strength, and my joy is not contingent upon anything that could change.
Yes, sir. He that dwelleth in the secret place.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
Yes, sir.
Yeah. So with that, as someone who desires to be mentored, someone who your mom, your dad is telling you that you need a mentor, your coworkers, your friends telling you need a mentor, listen to them and know that it is not a slight to you. It is not an insult for anyone to ever say that you need a mentor. It simply means that, God, I thank you. They see you further than where you are right now.
Mm-hmm.
And they want to get somebody who can show you the image of where you are supposed to go and be. That's all it is.
They want to show you, expose you.
Expose you to it. They want to expose you to something different, show you a different side of life. I lived at born and raised at 3030 Michigan Avenue.
Yes, sir.
You could have never told me, God, I thank you, that I'd be sitting in the homes of multimillionaires talking to them about why they should support a particular situation, why they should support a particular organization, why they should support the mission of mentoring or providing sport opportunities to children across Southeast Michigan. You could have never told me that. You could have never told me that God would take this little high yellow light skinned boy,
sir. Yes.
Who's never met anybody in his immediate family to graduate college, and he said, you're going to graduate college.
Yes, sir.
You would never have told me, man, that he would do the things he's done. Watch this. He exposed me to
it. He exposed you to
it. He put me around people who, watch this, the exposure created in me an appetite for it. I desired it. And so,
that's good. Exposure creates an appetite.
Exposure creates an appetite. Think about the things that you are exposed to. You develop an appetite for it.
Yes, you do. I was sitting there thinking when you were saying just correlating you interacting with multimillionaires now, which you happen to be one of those. You know, let's go ahead and speak these words of faith. You know,
God, I receive it in Jesus' name.
But I was thinking about the 14-year-old you that was at First National Bank, right?
Mm-hmm.
Where money
National City Bank.
National City Bank, excuse me. Mm-hmm. National City Bank, where money was being exchanged, where business was being discussed, mm-hmm. where decisions for these types of initiatives, where transactions were happening.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Because faith is a transaction.
It's a transaction.
Faith is a transaction.
Yes, sir.
Where you depend on God and you surrender to him what belongs to him, which is our lives.
That's it.
And then he gives what he already had planned for us and deposits it down. But then he also, and I know those of you listening might think it's getting a little churchy. Come on to church.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Sure. For what he does is he gives us the keys to unlock all of those things.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. I've given you the keys
mm-hmm.
to the kingdom
mm-hmm.
to unlock this revelation that I am the Christ, that I am your Father. And watch this. Whatever you bind is bound. Whatever you loose is loose.
Well, let me give you this analogy very
yes,
quickly.
Sir.
Working in the bank, I remember watching this. Every morning when we got to the branch manager would look for the CSR manager.
Yes, sir.
Because watch this. The branch manager had the code to the safe, but the CSR manager had the key
to the safe.
And so she could put the code however many times she wanted. Until the key went in, it never opened. And reverse. She could put the key in as many times she wanted, but until the code was there. So watch this.
Yeah.
So the scripture that you just said, he said, he that cometh to God must believe
that he is.
That he is.
Yes, sir.
Comma. And that he is a rewarder of them that diligently seek him.
Yes,
so,
sir.
So the thing is, he said, I'm not just giving you the key, but I'm giving you the code so that you can get in there, so that you can access everything that I have for you. And I agree with you. It was that exposure, watching Guardian Armor come in with a boatload. I mean, literally talking about, you know, we're coming in with a $100,000 drop today. I had never seen $100,000 in cash before.
Yes, sir.
But that exposure allowed me to see it. So watch this. When I got to the place where $100,000 was the normal.
Right.
I wasn't like, ooh.
$100,000.
Ooh.
Yeah.
My thoughts didn't get away from me in that moment because he had exposed me to it.
Right.
Earlier on to show me how to deal with it, how to handle it, but more importantly, how to be representative in that place.
In that moment.
In
yes,
that
sir.
Space.
Do you know, I used to work at Progress Bank and
okay.
when I lived out in Philly. So I lived out in Philly for a while and I worked at Progress Bank. And at 17 years old, prior to going to college,
mm-hmm.
I was the head teller.
Wow.
And so, you know, of course, you have people who are a lot of years my senior,
mm-hmm.
but I come in as the head teller. And so all major transactions, I worked in a business loop, a business district. So there were major transactions happening, you know, a lot of money being exchanged, deposited, withdrawn. There were, you know, we had business, we had corps, we had all of those things happening. And I was 17 years old, and this was just happening around me.
Mm-hmm.
And it was the norm.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when businesses came to make their drop, and they came to make their withdrawals, and we already had what they needed for the week set up. And to think, like, at 17, this is what I was exposed to. To think for you,
yes,
at 14, this is what you were exposed to, and how every experience in our life, that exposure gives us an education that somebody telling us could not give.
Come on. To get an experience, you got to have exposure first.
That sounds good.
And when you get that exposure, you are the. Here's the thing. So whenever you're presented with truth, there also comes a responsibility.
Yeah, A response.
A response.
Yes, sir.
You have to decide, am I going to take what has been given to me, the drawing board?
Yes.
You've given me this outline of how to move my life forward. Am I going to take your book and just put it up on the shelf and leave it there?
All right.
Or am I going to take that book and begin to really go through it and highlight and then apply the principles that you've laid out? Every time you're presented with any type of truth, it requires a response. It immediately makes you responsible. Mm. You're not going to be, see, this is what I love about God. When we get to heaven, he's not going to hold me responsible for what you did.
All right.
What you heard.
Yes, sir.
What you, no. He's going to hold me responsible for what I heard.
Absolutely.
What I did. And so when we are exposed to something, if we choose the good response, I'm going to say that, if we choose the good response to say, I'm going to pull these nuggets, I'm going to apply this to my life, we then step into experience.
Okay.
And experience begins to teach us, and it begins to instruct us. It begins to give us reference points so that later on in life, when I go through something similar or I'm exposed to something that is contrary, my experience now speaks.
That sounds good.
And says, oh, no. I can do this like this.
So let's break it down in a process oriented way. Exposure to truth demands a response.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And the way that you respond then shapes your experience.
It shapes your experience.
And it's not that your experience is shaping your response, but it is your response to truth being presented that shapes your experience.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
I mean,
yes,
that was powerful.
Yes, sir. Yes,
so listen, as we talk about mentorship, you are the vice president of 100 Black Men.
I am, sir. Yes,
talk
sir.
To me about 100 Black Men.
Yes, sir. 100 Black Men is an organization of notable individuals from across. It is a national organization, actually international, but our chapter here in metropolitan Detroit, we have a wonderful cross-section of men who have committed themselves to supporting young men of color and their families. They are successful in their own right throughout their communities, serving as business owners, politicians, pastors. I mean, you name it, we touch it in terms of our membership. And so I was fortunate enough to be elected as the vice president of the chapter. It has been a wonderful experience to just simply work with other Black men. And I would say there's many of who I am the youngest of.
Yes,
but to be in their presence and to hear their wisdom and to hear about their experiences and then to have them expose me to things so that I can then get an experience has been phenomenal. And so we continue to push the message of mentoring. We have our Project Success Mentoring Program, which is led by a wonderful team of gentlemen who meet with young men literally every Saturday from October to June. Of every year.
From October to June.
And we take breaks. I shouldn't say every Saturday, but we take breaks intermittently because of holidays, et cetera. But within reason, we're meeting with these young men, up to as many as 45 of them, providing them with what we see as the necessary tools to be successful in life as a young Black man. And that includes tutoring. And it's a full wraparound program that we provide for them.
Absolutely. So if I have a young man that's in need of this level of mentorship, mm-hmm. and I want to connect with you through 100 Black Men, mm-hmm. how do I get my son enrolled, or
sure.
how do I get my son involved?
Yeah. So the program currently, as it's set up, it's targeting several identified schools.
Okay.
But we do have it at any given moment, sometimes some openings. The program is aimed at third through eighth graders right now. And so it is limited there. But as we are looking at strategic directions moving forward, we're looking at how we can really build and expand the capacity of the program. But parents, guardians, et cetera, can always email us at info@100blackmendetroit.org. And that's the number 100blackmendetroit.org, info@. And they can always email us there with their requests. If we can't help them, we have partnerships within the community where we can refer them to other programs to provide them with some assistance.
So let's talk about this, because we alluded to it a little bit, but we did talk off air and we agreed that fatherhood is the best hood.
Absolutely.
Fatherhood is the best
hood. The best hood.
I'm telling you, when I watch a lot of your posts, mm-hmm. Whether it be through IG or Facebook, mm-hmm. and I see Madison, whether she's doing her sock drive or yeah. whether you're just out to eat, mm-hmm. or she's wowed you with one of her where she's been able to tell you something that you've taught her, or she's teaching you something, mm-hmm, or sharing, right, something. She's so insightful. And we were talking before on air. So parents, listen, if your kids want a lot of energy, no,
right.
No, but we were just talking off air about how our kids, I loved it because she had a level of deductive logic, and she was, right, calling you with it, where,
right,
she had eaten some candy, had a lot of energy. So she figured, and then she went straight to sleep.
Right.
So she figured, hey, this was a pretty good process. Uh-huh. Let me tell dad, yeah, I need to up the candy, dad. Right,
right, right. Because then I'll go straight,
yeah,
to sleep.
Yeah, then I'll go straight to sleep. Yeah. I got this. Yeah. But you share in the book an experience. Mm-hmm. It's either in the foreword or the introduction, mm-hmm, about when we're talking about flipping the switch.
Yes, sir. Yes,
and
sir.
Any dad, you've had this experience, mm-hmm, mm-hmm, but it was nighttime, you were sound asleep, and all of a sudden you heard your daughter's voice yell that name, that if you're any kind of father, when you hear this name,
you're gonna move.
You jump up alert, that's ready, right, to tear the world apart twice.
That's right.
You look at the door as if it's an enemy, right?
Absolutely, absolutely.
But she yelled, daddy, daddy. Mm-hmm. And because the nightlight had gone out.
Right, right.
And so you hurry to her, and I'm telling all the stories. No, listen, no, you make fine. Sure you get the book.
Yeah.
But you hurry to, you hasten to her room, and you realize that the bulb had gone out in the nightlight.
Mm-hmm.
But she was comforted by knowing that your presence, mm-hmm, was on the way.
Absolutely.
So let's talk about just being the dad,
yes,
man.
Sir.
Dad,
yes,
life is cool, man.
It
hashtag
is, man.
Dad life.
Hashtag, yeah, fatherhood is lit.
Yes.
Hashtag fatherhood is lit. As I shared, you know, my story is that I don't know my dad. I mean, if he walked in this room right now, I can't say, oh yeah, that's him. Like, I don't know him. And so for me, when I became a father,
yes,
I said that I wanted to give it my all. And I know some people, and I'm very transparent, so y'all forgive me, but I can tell you, I get some text messages, and or not text messages, but Facebook, social media messages that say, hey, you're trying to, you know, pimp the fact that your daughter is this and all that. And so people sometimes think that you are, you know, trying to be something more, or you to almost leverage your relationship as a father as something to get ahead.
And those are called haters.
Right. Yeah, yeah. You know, right? And certainly we know the source of it. But
yeah,
but part of it is because our society, especially amongst our Black culture, let's be honest, consistency, if I can say it that way, is that there is absent fathers.
Yes.
And so when you see a father who is invested and who is committed and who is consistent, sometimes society does not know how to respond to that man.
Absolutely.
Because this is not a normal thing. And somebody that I respect very well, they often say to me, is that we oftentimes applaud and award people for doing what they should have been doing all along.
What they should have been doing.
All along.
Yes.
And so because of that, people sometimes don't know how to receive the father relationship, especially when it's a father-daughter relationship. But here's my stance on it. I believe that one of the greatest assignments that God could ever give me is that of a father.
Yes, sir.
I mean, he could call me to be a pastor. He can call me to be a president of a Fortune 500 company. He could make me multimillionaire. But my greatest assignment that he'll ever call me to do in the earth,
yes, sir,
will to be that of a father, because as we talked about offline, we are shaping them. We have been given the opportunity to mold and shape a future generation.
Absolutely.
And so my role and capacity as a father is one that I take serious. It's one that I beat myself up over more than you might think. And it's one that I sincerely have asked the Lord to keep me, yes, God, in a position where I'm always a good example and that I'm a light for her.
Yes, sir.
So that when she reaches those dark moments, that she knows my dad will tell me X, Y, and Z. Let me say this, because that somebody's listening and I hear your spirit. This is not to negate the role of the mother. Because when you understand God and how he designed everything, you understand that he made the father and the mother on purpose,
on
because
purpose.
He understood that they both carry a significance in the life of that child, of those children, of that future generation. And so if we can learn how to be committed to our role and play our role good, we ain't,
absolutely,
got time to worry about what the other one ain't doing or is doing.
Just know your role.
Just know your
just,
role.
And one of the things that's interesting about being a dad, being a father, is that because it's not something that is norm, and it is really actually the exception, because the statistics say that 85 close to 85-90% of the homes across Detroit are female-dominated single-parent households. So when you see, I remember when I used to have, my kids are 18 months apart, and I would have my son and my daughter with me, and somebody would say, oh, it's your weekend. Or they would say, oh, you're babysitting your children. Or, you know, they would have these negative connotations around it because they had not been exposed to a positive example. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And when this is something that I say, and so hear the spirit in what I'm saying, is that very few people have been exposed to the love of a man void perversion.
You're right.
And when you see that pure love that God the Father has for us, mm-hmm. in turn expressed through a man to his children, people don't know how to take it.
Don't know how to receive
it. Instead of them just embracing the truth of that love, mm-hmm. the warmth of that love, the power of that love,
the power of that love,
mm-hmm. they would much rather throw negativity at sure. it to break it down.
Sure.
Because what it does is it shines a light on an area that says, I have, as Ilyana Van Zandt would say, I have a hole in my heart size of my father.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And as dads, especially, man, my father wasn't in my life. Mm-hmm. And I realized that in order for me to properly father, I had to get in tune with our Heavenly Father.
Absolutely.
And I went to my pastor, who was my mentor, mm-hmm. and I was just honest.
Yeah.
I said, Pastor, I'm getting ready to be a dad. I'm nervous. I'm scared. I said, because my only reference for fatherhood is one of pain.
Come on.
And she said, son, God will teach you.
Mm-hmm.
And man, let me tell you, we bump our heads, we have fun. Yeah. And in those learning moments, because I don't pretend to be Superman for
that's
my
it.
Kids.
That's it.
And I teach them the process and the way. My son told me the other day, man, he said we were riding in the car and I was bumping some of my old school hip hop. You know, I was having one of those moments. So he and I are riding. We had just got our haircuts. And it was a song said, it's all good now. We out the hood now. Uh-huh. And he said, Dad, you grew up in the hood? I said, well, yeah, son. And he says, it's hard for me to believe this. And I got a little emotional. He said, it's hard for me to believe that because of who you are now.
Yep. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Yes, sir. That's powerful.
And he said, I said, well, son. And he was talking about how rappers don't have, like a lot. He was talking about the rappers. He was like, a lot of rappers don't have their dad in their life.
Mm-hmm.
I said, son, a lot of people don't have their dad in their life.
Right.
And he said, I am so happy that I have you in my life.
My Lord.
And I said, wow.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, and that is, that love, man, is so pure.
Absolutely.
Man, it will cause God to move in your life in a way for him to demonstrate himself as a father that you've never experienced.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And man, it makes us great to be dads. So let me tell you, from one dad to another, sir, salute.
Absolutely.
To
yes,
everything
sir.
That you're doing.
Yes, sir, man.
Because man, we are shaping a generation.
Absolutely.
I saw Madison, her sock donation went up close to 500.
Oh, actually much more than that.
Oh, exceeded. Go ahead. Tell me.
She wound up with about 1,200 pairs of socks.
Wow.
Total. And so I actually have socks in the back of my truck right now.
Okay.
So that we're going to continue to donate. She brought her mother and I together, and she said, hey, for my birthday this year, I'd like to do a service project. And she explained to us how she wanted to do this. Her mother and I said, okay, so what do you need us to do? She was like, well, I need to use this space for the drop-off location and pickup, and I just need you guys to help me do this. And, I mean, she told me how she wanted the flyer design, what picture she wanted, and we connected the dots. And, I mean, she met with our pastor at the church and said, can I use the church as the drop-off location? She really led this whole project, and we're both just ecstatically proud of her. I mean, this was her concept, this was her project, and she sincerely made it happen. And so, you know, I'll share this with you. She said to me, she said, Daddy, I'm gonna ask everybody to help me to get 100 pairs. She said, but I'm sure we'll get about 500.
All right.
Yeah. So she had faith already starting, you know, at the start and at the onset. And so she did a tremendous job. Her mother and her, they went and dropped off the first donation at Detroit Rescue Mission Ministries. They shouted her out on the Facebook page.
Yes, sir.
And then from there, she was, we got contacted by WWJ, 950 AM here in the Metro Detroit area. They wanted to do an interview with her. And so she was interviewed, and the story ran actually on Thanksgiving Day on the radio. And so
from there, I had people reaching out via Facebook saying, can I drop off socks? Can I send you socks? And I mean, she received socks from California, Arizona, Texas. People are literally going on Amazon or whatever other store and purchasing the socks and shipping them straight to the church. So she did had a wonderful vision. It has evolved into some other things. So there's more to come in this area.
Yes, sir.
So look forward to it.
Sound like we have a little evangelist on our hands.
Absolutely.
There, you know? Yeah.
Absolutely.
So I'm here with Antoine Jackson, the minister, author, entrepreneur, and mentor. Mm. If you know anything about him, it's three things that clearly define him: the mission, the ministry, and the motivation.
Yes, sir.
So let's get into some just some product things that we definitely want to share out and where people can contact you and can reach out to you. So you have five books. Okay. Hey,
yeah,
listen,
I
got to get my info together.
No,
right?
You're okay. You're okay.
So look, so five books.
Yes, sir. Yes,
all
sir.
Right. And go ahead and run it down for us.
Yeah, so all of the books are available on Amazon.com or BarnesandNoble.com. Certainly, you can visit me at AntoineJackson.org. There you can find all of the books. But the very first book that I wrote was entitled When You've Had Enough. And so it talks about, again, just the challenges that I experienced personally of caring for two relatives and just that inner struggle that winds up developing. And then we came with the book 100 Watt Life. And this was really the motivation. This was the piece that total transparency. That first book, I didn't do much with it. But this book, the Lord really set a fire under me and had me flipping some switches. And so we had push it. And so from 100 Watt Life, we pulled out, flipped the switch. Because within the book 100 Watt Life, there's a phrase in it that says, flip the switch, change the bulb. Whatever you do, make up your mind to shine. In every situation, you won't just be able to flip the switch. Sometimes you're going to have to change some bulbs. Sometimes you have to deal with some wiring issues. But whatever you do, what has to happen is you have to make up your mind to shine. And so that's the message of the Flip the Switch book. We share the life-changing, what I call PowerPoints, to really get your light shining and out there. And then from there, we wrote a book called
The Faith of a Winner.
Yes, yeah, sir. Thank you, sir. The Faith of a Winner, I mean, sincerely went through a very trying time in my personal walk in my life and began to look at God at through a different lens and begin to question some things. But the Lord really began to reveal to me from that scripture over there in Hebrews 11 that there's a faith of a winner.
Yes, sir.
That doesn't exist anywhere else.
That sounds good.
There's a faith of a winner. And so we shared that in a sermon to begin with. And then the Lord impressed on my heart to put it in the book. And so we launched that book. And then we launched the book No More Later.
No More Later.
No
Absolutely.
More Later.
Yes, sir.
And so,
Okay.
And so No More Later is the most recent book. And it is simply it is a result of a teaching that I was doing with some young people where we were talking about procrastination. And I tell anybody, you know, by the time I graduated high school, I had put the pro in procrastination.
Okay.
I had it down. You want to learn how to do it? I can teach you, you know.
Right.
And so what I realized is that procrastination was keeping me from really shining my light. Mm-hmm. Procrastination was holding me back. It was the substratum of a lot of the things that were not getting finished in my life because I was procrastinating. And so I had to really unpack and deal with what that procrastination looked like. What caused it? Where did it come from? And so we debunked the myth in the book that you're born a procrastinator. No, you're conditioned to become
become
a procrastinator.
Yes,
you know, you're exposed to it, and so you start experiencing it.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And so we've been pushing this book, and it's done very well. Well, amongst young people, teenagers. So, again, all of the books are available on my website or via Amazon or Barnes & Noble. They, I think all of them except one, don't ask me which one right now, but I think The Faith of a Winner is not available on Kindle, but all of the other ones are.
Okay, great. Yeah. Well, I appreciate you sharing that out. And again, I want to publicly thank you for the opportunity to have you on the show, as well as to thank you for the opportunity to be a part of the Flip the Switch conference.
Yes, sir.
I know Flip the Switch 2019
is coming.
It's definitely in the works.
Yes,
I look
sir.
Forward to helping to sponsor and be a part of that. And right now I have a book available, The 100 Watt Life. If you go ahead and if you put something into the comments right now, I have a signed copy
yes,
of the 100 Watt Life from my brother, Elder Antoine D. Jackson, and you will come and receive that. And guess what I'm also going to do? I'm going to sponsor your ticket to Flip the Switch Conference 2019.
There it is. Yes, sir.
Yeah, so make sure if you comment now, and I want you to say, no more later, mm-hmm. flip the switch to my 100-watt life. No more later, flip the switch to my 100-watt life. And with that being said, I always end with this. Your future is not behind you. It is not before you. It is within you. God bless you. Again, make sure you tune in. Share, like, post, all of these things. Any questions you have, make sure we'll be sure to follow up and answer them. And until then, God bless you.
God bless you.